با ما در ارتباط باشید.
Have been before, and so that's the sphere that I'm interested in defending and protecting. I want to make sure that Russia's position is really stable there. He's engaged in an offensive defense of what he sees as Russia's interests in this area, which of course are very much fused with his own interests as president in maintaining that position and the position of the people around him in the system that he has created. And what he's trying to do is really, in a way, repel all others who might have any kind of aspirations for any kind of political or economic engagement in the same space. It's a kind of protectionist, but a very muscular protectionist stance of this position that he's sketched out. Now, of course, it's also in a very different mindset, a very different frame from what we're used to talking about. And I think that's really the challenge that we have. He is establishing a different way, an older way of talking about Russia's position in the world. It's not one that we were hoping for, certainly several years ago. And he cares about the standing of Russia, but he cares about this idea of being respected and about being treated in accordance with the way that he has laid things out.
That in part was the emphasis on the Olympics, I assume, and those kinds of things. He wants the world to admire Russia and admire him as a great nation, which I assume the world does, and in some cases sense that Russia is going to be part of the future. Gordakovsky talked a lot about the West and his own idea that Russia should be looking west. How is Putin looking east?
He's not looking east, no. He's actually trying to carve out a position that he wants to say is neither east nor west. It's Russia's position. I mean, there's some very interesting things that Putin has said over time. I mean, he said very early on that Russia is part of Europe. It just is. You know, there's no argument about this. You may not, you know, see Russia in that same way, but Russia is part of Europe. Then he's also gone on to say that Russia has this Eurasian perspective. It's neither east nor west. It's a unique civilization. What he's trying to carve out here is an idea of Russia being like the United States and China. In his view, there's only really three countries that matter, and Russia is going to be one of them. It's its unique landmass, it's this straddling of continents, and it's the fact that Russia is still with us in many respects as an empire, as it has been for hundreds of years. It's quite unique, he's trying to say, in a geopolitical context, and also now in terms of an economic context with its vast natural resources and oil and gas base. So he's trying to carve out this position that's neither of the above, but is very much unique to Russia. And I guess that's the challenge, you know, that he's posing to himself as well as to the rest of us.
And Michael, what's the challenge for the United States? So you were part of the policy making vis-a-vis at the National Security Council, and that is ambassador. Where are we today, and what options do we have, and what policies can we enact, you know, that might make the relationship better? Or is the ball simply in his court?
Well, when I was in government, I never allowed us to make the goal of any bilateral relationship to make it better. It was what's in our national interest. And up until this latest crisis, we had a very clear strategy of trying to integrate Russia into the international system and work with Russia on security and economic interests that we thought were of mutual benefit. And I want to remind you of that, because this pivot that we're talking about with Putin is very recent. Just 2 years ago, he wasn't talking about Russia going its own way. They were talking about Russia as a European country when President Medvedev was there. And I think that he's pivoted, and he's decided we got to go it alone. And by the way, I don't really see that as winning them respect. I see it as the opposite. What I don't know, and what I think is a big question mark, is whether the rest of the Russian elites are going along with that. Think about the head of Rosneft, the largest oil company in Russia. Igor Sechin, a very close friend of Putin. They've worked together for 25 years. When I was the U.S. ambassador, he wanted to make Rosneft the next ExxonMobil. He didn't want to create the 19th century or 18th century Russia. That's a lot harder to do today. Head of their biggest bank, German Greff, who spoke very critically at this investment conference just a few days ago. He wants Russia to be part of the West, part of the world capitalist system. So that was what we were trying to do. I think that has to be put on pause now until Russia figures out what it wants to do. I'm not so sure that the elites around Putin are going to be with him for the long term in terms of this turn away from the West.
Yeah. When I talk to friends who know those people that you were talking to, they say that there's some split within those closest advising, those who support support him and those who are leaning towards the views that you expressed earlier about Sechin and grief. Any sense about that, Stephen, in terms of how those people who have his ear are changing in their own attitudes about the future of Russia?
I think it's been clear for couple of years, Charlie, that the Russian elite is divided about how to proceed, how to try to modernize the country. There are not a lot of people who will tell Putin to his face that he's on the wrong track. So the question really is, how does this discontent and division within the elite play itself out? It's one of the things that Hodorkovsky is plainly counting on. He is, just as Mike says, seeing that 12% who have European outlook within the country as his allies. But how does he mobilize them? How does he encourage them to act on their interests and on their views? And even if he doesn't lead them, how do they express their own preferences? That's a tough climb in Russia today because Putin has so many of the strong cards.
What's interesting is why we've been talking about society around him, but look at the regime. Look at how paranoid this super confident regime is actually behaving.
Yeah, exactly.
They're talking about regulating the internet and making Twitter a media company. Just 2 days ago, the Russian government canceled high school exchanges with the United States. That's not a regime that's really confident about its course of action, in my opinion. And that suggests something about what, since we're talking about revolutions, I teach a course on revolutions here at Stanford. And there's this great piece by a guy named Timur Koran, and he talks about hidden preferences and how we're always surprised by revolutions because people hide their preferences when it's inconvenient to express them. And then there's a cascade effect once there's a breakthrough. I don't pretend to know that in Russia, and I don't believe anybody that does know what the hidden preferences are, but it doesn't seem like it's a regime that feels confident, and it doesn't feel like a place that feels confident in the course that they've recently taken.
But does Putin maintain the power to crush any of that?
He does until he doesn't. That's the point that I think, revolutions seem impossible beforehand and they seem inevitable afterwards. And the problem I think he has is he does not have a basis of legitimacy beyond economic performance. I really don't think, telling people for the next 20 years that we're fighting Nazis and NATO, because that's what you see on TV today in Russia, that's not going to work for 20 years. Maybe for 2 months, maybe for 2 years. Maybe for 5 years, but 20 years? That does not seem like a strategy of a long-term strategy for the Putin regime.
Stephen?
Charlie, I'd add one other thing to that. We haven't seen Putin recently. You could argue we haven't seen Putin at all since he returned to the presidency with a kind of confidence in the way he acts and an ability to deliver the goods. Just take what happened in Ukraine this year. He and his associates were publicly urging Yanukovych to crack down forcefully and restore order against these protesters. And when they finally took his advice, the result was a nationwide upheaval against them. So Putin called that one totally wrong. If he calls situations like that in his own country that wrong, then we may have a very unpredictable future ahead.
Charlie, can I just say something
please.
On this, though? Because the one thing that we do see with Putin, I mean, what Mike and Steve have said is absolutely right. He's made some miscalculations. He is very capable of learning from his mistakes. He's very adaptable. People look at him and see, this guy is a great tactician. They always say he doesn't have a strategy. But actually, Putin does plan. He has a kind of form of strategic planning. He always has contingencies or something else. And we've seen time and time again when he's made a miscalculation, it's taken him a while, but he's made a corrective. Not obviously in a way that we would be particularly happy about. In the case of the opposition that we saw in 2011 and 2012 to him, he triggered that off in many respects by saying he was coming back to the presidency. He didn't expect this big backlash. He'd misread the mood, as Steve and Mike are saying. But then he figured out how to get to the roots of the opposition, how to decapitate them, how to take out someone like Alexei Navalny.
Yes.
I mean, he did a very similar thing with Khodorkovsky. He basically had him sit for 10 years in a series of penal colonies so that it would be a lesson to others about what might be the consequences of them taking some kind of action against him. And in many respects, what he's doing in Ukraine now is one big messaging and signalling. He's made mistakes, he's tried to correct for them, but he's basically signalling that he shall not be crossed. And that if he is crossed, that we should not underestimate him, that he will be prepared to actually commit to any threat that he has made. And that's a very dangerous situation that we're in now, because we have very poor, at this particular juncture, contacts directly with Putin and his inner circle. He doesn't trust us at all. And he's got a threat perception, which I think Mike and Steve have laid out very clearly here, that goes to the idea that we're trying to overthrow him, and also because he feels defensive and that things are not going according to the original plan. So he's constantly having to up the ante and to basically react in a more and more forceful way. And I think, again, this is why we're in such a dangerous juncture at this particular time.
Just one last thing about Putin here, because it comes straight from Khodorkovsky, and I think it's interesting. Khodorkovsky clearly has a high regard for Putin as an opponent.
Yeah.
And one thing he said about him is Putin never will go completely against Russian opinion, public opinion as he understands
right.
it. He knows that Putin is always trying to maneuver so that he can claim he's got the public at his back. And that's that. And he's been pretty skillful at that in many situations. So I think Khodorkovsky knows that this is a formidable opponent that he's taken on.
Yeah, that lends itself to what I was going to ask Mike, which is that sometimes in the American conversation, you'll see senators and congresspeople say things like, he's just a former KGB thug. But he's more than that, isn't he, Mike?
Obviously. He's had a long career in politics. I first met him in the spring of 1991, and he's been involved in various ways to this day. I agree with Fiona that he is adept at learning. That's important. And I think he did handle the opposition. But he handled it with coercion. And, the long arc of history is against autocratic leaders that rely on coercion to stay in power. Mm-hmm. If you just look over the last 100 years, the odds are against those kinds of regimes, especially ones that are as rich, educated, connected as the Russian people are today. Mm-hmm. So at some point, maybe it's in the post-Putin era, by the way, Putin might survive as a leader and as a regime. But it's just hard for me to imagine over the long haul how this current way of governing Russia survives.
Thank you all. Very interesting. Thanks so much.
Ours was the first modern airliner, revolutionary by every standard. And that became our passion, to always build something better. Airplanes that fly cleaner and farther on less fuel. That redefine comfort and connect the world like never before. After all, you can't turn dreams into airplanes unless your passion for innovation is nonstop.
We all have to plan for retirement. But when we start worrying about tomorrow, we miss out on what matters today. At AXA, we offer advice and help you break down your retirement goals into small, manageable steps. Because when you plan for tomorrow, it helps you live for today. Can we help you take a small step? For advice, retirement, and life insurance, connect with AXA.
These are the tennis shoes
Whoa. That
got torture tested by teenagers and cried out for help from the surprise designers who came to the rescue with a brilliant fix.
I love it.
Which created thousands of new customers for the tennis shoes that got torture tested by teenagers. The Internet of Everything is changing manufacturing. Is your network ready?
We now turn from Russia to the movies. There's a movie opening on Friday night. It's called Gone Girl. It is directed by David Fincher and stars Ben Affleck and Rosamund Pike and is based on the best-selling novel by Gillian Flynn. Here is a preview and a part of that conversation, the conversation in full, on Monday night. Thank you for joining us. See you then.
Nick Dunn, you're probably the most hated man in America right now. Did you kill your wife, Nick?
Everyone told us and told us marriage is hard work. Not for me and Nick.
As you all know, my wife, Amy Elliott Dunn, disappeared 3 days ago. I had nothing to do with the disappearance of my wife. I have nothing to hide.
Sammy got friends we can talk to?
No, not really.
You don't know if she has friends, you don't know what she does all day, and you don't know your wife's blood type.
Just being a good guy, so everybody can see him being a good guy.
Well, you really don't like him, do you?
All I'm trying to do is be nice to the people who are volunteering to help find Amy.
I will practice believing my husband loves me, but I could be wrong.
You ever seen that guy in the glasses before?
Amy is the kind of girl who attracts admirers.
Whoever took her is bound to bring her back.
I'm hoping you can tell me what this means.
You want to solve Amy's treasure hunt?
You seen this girl around here?
Yeah, I remember her.
I know you. I saw you at the volunteer center.
I wanted to help.
What'd she want?
She wanted a gun.
We are all scared, but we are all here now.
I feel like something to be jettisoned if necessary. I feel like I could disappear.
Of a sociopath is a lack of empathy.
Amy lost a lot of blood in there. Then somebody mopped it up.
Why do they mop up the blood if they're trying to stage a crime scene?
Whatever they found, I think it's safe to assume that it's very bad.
I'd finally realized I am frightened of my own husband.
I would show you, as if you're doing a deposition, what to say, what not to say.
A trained monkey?
A trained monkey who doesn't get lethal injections.
She's going to eat you alive.
You assaulted her?
It's not good enough for you?
I hit her?
It's not even close.
Absolutely not. I never touched her.
We now believe Nick is involved in the disappearance of our daughter.
Without a body, without a murder weapon, their only hope is a confession.
You don't know anything yet?
You need to tell me.
How was your marriage, Nick?
Are you asking me if I killed my wife?
Man of my dreams. This man of mine may kill me.
What about my son?
Nick!
This man may kill me. In her own words, this man may truly kill me.
You ever hear the expression, simplest answer is often the correct one?
Actually, I've never found that to be true.
What these guys put together was a really interesting challenge and a really interesting and unusual protagonist. It's not a conventional protagonist because it's somebody that Hollywood has this obsession with likability. Like if you read studio's notes, one of the first objections, the guy's not likable enough. We're not invested with him enough. And to make somebody likable, the theory goes, well, you have to like adhere to these six or seven, you know, articles of behavior.
Yes.
And this movie, this book and movie seem to totally want to abandon that. And so that what happens is that sometimes he makes choices that sometimes you can understand and empathize with, and then things start to happen. You go, whoa, you know, I'm not sure that I would do that exactly. And he's sometimes obtuse and sometimes astute. And what's interesting about that is that I think the audience is forced to project themselves onto a more honest protagonist, because that's who we really supposed to, than one that is conveniently manufactured to, you know, sort of reassure us of our own virtue.
So you got to the bar around 11 today. Where were you before that, just to cross that off?
Well, I was home. I left at 9:30. I got a cup of coffee, newspaper. I went to Sawyer Beach and read the news.
Did you visit with anyone there?
Well, I mean, I kind of go to Sawyer Beach for the solitude.
So your wife has no friends here. Is she kind of standoffish? Ivy League, rubs people the wrong way?
She's from New York. She's complicated. She's got very high standards.
Type A? Well, that can make you crazy if you're not like that. You seem pretty laid back. Type B. Speaking of which, Amy's blood type.
God, I don't know. I have to look it up at the house.
You don't know if she has friends. You don't know what she does all day. And you don't know your wife's blood type.
Sure, y'all are married.
I maybe it's type O.
Where are her folks? New York?
Yeah.
Can they get here in time for this press conference tomorrow?
Tomorrow? I have no idea. I haven't talked to them.
You haven't called your wife's parents
yet? I mean, you can't get a signal in this building. I've been in here talking to you.
Well, call them, please, Nick, now.
Should I know my wife's blood type?
So now you see a screenplay that you wrote, and you see a movie that David directed, and you see an amazing cast. Has it added your insight into what you were trying to say?
I finally realized what I was trying to say.
Well, no, yes, that's it. Give interpretations that add to your own sense of who you drew.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely. And that, I mean, that for me was part of the process and part of the fun of it, and why it was so different. You know, the two different disciplines between writing a novel and writing a movie. In fact, when I was writing the screenplay, I just had this giant pink sticky note above my laptop that said, "It is a movie," to remind myself of that we go to movies for very different reasons than we read a book, and that you have to respect those differences. And when I got to be in the rehearsals with these two for, you know, almost a month beforehand, I felt like that was when the screenplay really started clicking and being really fun to write, because I was tailoring it to them and what they were bringing. And they, you know, they were doing very different things with the lines that I had had going through my head for years at that point. And every once in a while I'd have to catch...
Thrilling?
Well, you know, every once in a while I'd have to catch myself because they would, you know, hit a word differently than had been. Yeah, I would. I'd have to be like, no. And then it was like... then it was really refreshing. To realize, oh, yeah, no, these characters were going on into a different life and two very good hands.
You know, I just want you to be careful where you put down that monk brewed Belgian wheat beer, because the party's down to like 3 bee slices and a bottle of pucker.
It might attract some desperate characters.
Good. I mean, the Amish run a room spree.
They already relieved me of my artisanal meat platter.
Finally, someone tells me how to pronounce that word.
Meat?
Yes, meat. One syllable. Thank you. Whose beer am I about to drink? Don't tell me. Let's see, who's your type? I don't see you sitting quietly while he bloviates on his post-grad thesis about Proust. Uh-oh, is that him? Ironic hipster, so self-aware, it makes everything a joke.
I prefer men who are funny, not funny. What type are you?
Corn-fed, salt-of-the-earth Missouri guy.
Missouri?
Mm-hmm.
Cute.
Native New Yorker.
World ends at the Hudson.
What's your name?
Amy.
What are we saying about marriage?
He's looking at guilt. You know, I certainly started the story with that idea of, you know, how honest are we ever in relationships? You know, I like that idea that we are kind of emotional con artists when we start in on, you know, on any sort of meeting, that we're presenting our best self forward. And I like that idea that, you know, this was, you know, a murder mystery, but marriage was the mystery. You know, to solve the murder, you have to solve the marriage and figure out who these two people really were. And that idea, you know, especially in this very media saturated world, you know, how much are we ever really our true selves at all? And that's why I like the idea of the media is almost the third character in this film.
Yeah, and this also pervades this idea of what are they thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Do you ever really know what the person's thinking? You know, just because they tell you what they're thinking, are they truth telling there?
Did they ask if you wanted a lawyer?
I don't need a lawyer. They're out to this.
Did they ask personal stuff about Amy?
You know, they asked, like, why didn't she have any friends?
What'd you say?
Said she was complicated.
Nick, everyone knows complicated is code for bitch. Oh, God. I feel sick. It's so bizarre. It seems like the kind of thing that would happen to Amy. She always attracts these
drama. You can say it. It's just me and you.
Just because I don't like to be around Amy doesn't mean I don't care about her. Anyway, whoever took her is bound to bring her back.
Was it T.S. Eliot, I think, said that the, if you think of a playwright as trying to break into the mind of the audience, that the plot is basically just the sort of meat you throw the guard dogs to distract them while you get into the subconscious. And that's really what's, to me, what's going on here. You know, this plot, it's not that it's discarded, but that it occupies the conscious mind of the front brain. Well, underneath, this very provocative question is asked, which is, how much of marriage is lying? Which I think is sort of scary. I mean, everyone, you know, wants to think they have a good marriage and doesn't want to think of themselves as a liar. But by the same token, there's a sort of dance of how do I present myself the question of at what point do I
reveal my truth. And so how quick do we find out in marriage that there's an element of lying?
I think it depends on your marriage.
I think, you know, willing to play the game, because, you know, Gillian
sets this couple up. Gillian sets up this couple who, sort of, for narcissistic reasons of their own, have slightly shifted their true selves to sort of slot in with who they'd like to be perceived to be by the other
and
person.
The suggestion is that any couple could be this couple. Mm. That it could go this way and that these tendencies are at the root of marriage, as, along with all of the love and the purity and that stuff. There's also this underbelly that could be potentially quite toxic.
Yo, bro, you on Woo Woo? You kidding me? Everybody's on Woo Woo.
Woo Woo.
Lock and load, people.
We're going all in on Woo Woo.
Mark, comp us up a profile page.
Susie, write us some posts.
I want sponsored woos. I want targeted woos.
We need an ethnically ambiguous Woo Woo mascot.
Dude, are you still on Woo Woo?
Nah, man. My mom's on Woo Woo.
We all think about life insurance, but when we start worrying about tomorrow, we miss out on the things that matter today. At AXA, we offer advice and help you break down your insurance goals into small, manageable steps. Because when you plan for tomorrow, it helps you live for today. Can we help you take a small step? For advice, retirement, and life insurance, connect with AXA.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Everybody knows that.
Well, did you know certain cartoon characters should never have an energy drink?
Action.
Geico.
Introducing the Birds of America collection. 50 stunning hand-painted plates commemorating the state birds of our proud nation.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
How do you start your day so you make better investment decisions?
You watch Bloomberg Surveillance to find out what the markets are doing. And you talk to smart people. Bloomberg Surveillance, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Television.
Standard, and that became our passion, to always build something better. Airplanes that fly cleaner and farther on less fuel, that redefine comfort and connect the world like never before. After all, you can't turn dreams into airplanes unless your passion for innovation is nonstop. partnerships occur when both share a passion for improving, for growing in harmony. Speak from the heart and respect the other. Feeling of being comfortable, of being open, that creates the true partnership, which ensures the greatest success. Together, invest in remarkable Indonesia.
I'm Mark Halperin.
And I'm John Heilman. And with all due respect to the great Susanna Hoffs, this is not, for us, just another Manic Monday.
Konnichiwa, sports fans. Our lineup today includes a bevy of killer bees. That's Bubba, Big Bucks, and baseball. Also, we're happy to say, Governor Mitt Romney will be with us shortly out here. But first, the Supreme Court today decided they don't want anything to do with same-sex marriage this year. The court defied expectations by declining to accept some cases that could have opened up the door to greater validation of gay rights. Nonetheless, John, this is being seen as a victory for those who advocate legalizing same-sex marriage. It was super confusing. Why are people who support more legalized gay marriage, why are they happy if the court didn't take a case they wanted them to take?
Well, look, what they want ultimately is the court to come down and say on a national level, we're going to have gay marriage everywhere. There's going to be a national ruling of that kind. This is the next best thing. They basically have said that in these five states, in these five districts that were covered, that gay marriage is going to go onto the books in those states. And because of the way that the courts and jurisdictions work, it actually expands into about 11 states. So now 30 states plus the District of Columbia, gay marriage is basically going to be legal. And that is not a full victory. It's not 50 states. It's not everyone. But it's still a pretty big ground game victory for this movement.
The biggest thing we learned today, I think, based on the courts not taking it, is that you got your four liberal justices. Justice Kennedy is now clearly with the liberal justice. Pro-gay rights people felt they had him, but now they become confident that someday, if this is the court, this is the makeup of the court, someday there'll be a vote on a big case and there'll be a much broadening of these rights. They can be happy about that, even though they didn't get the cases they wanted.
It is hard to imagine that when there is another challenge to this, given what they've done today, although they haven't heard this case, given what they've done today and allowed these laws to go forward and become the law of those states, it's hard to imagine them going back, turning around and overturning what they did today.
Exactly. All right, moving on.
All right, Leon Panetta is in the news with the release tomorrow of his new book, Worthy Fights, a Memoir of Leadership in War and Peace. Panetta is a longtime Democratic stalwart, a California congressman, White House chief of staff under Bill Clinton, and most recently director of the CIA and Secretary of Defense for President Obama. Last week, President Panetta's book made headlines for an excerpt in which he criticized Obama for failing to use the leverage he had to secure a status of forces agreement in Iraq. Today, Panetta is quoted in an interview with USA Today, broadening his critique of his former boss, saying that in the past 2 years, quote, Obama has kind of lost his way. And when he was asked about the idea of Hillary Clinton as commander-in-chief, Panetta seemed to take another thinly veiled shot at the president.
The one thing about the Clintons is that they want to get it done. It isn't just about talking the game. It's about getting something done. When it comes to being president of the United States, it's one thing to talk a good game. It's another thing to deliver and to make things happen. And that's what you want in a president.
Mark, I know one of your favorite movies is Airplane. Famous line there. Leon is getting larger, and he certainly is in this case. How big a problem do you think this is for the White House and President Obama?
It's a big problem. He gets large tomorrow. He does broadcast and cable TV. And this is a very damning critique. And the White House is doing their best to not disrespect Leon Panetta because he's got, as you pointed out, iron-plated, gold-plated Democratic credentials. He's not Bob Gates, who Democrats can cast as a Republican. Privately, he has been extraordinarily critical of the president. He is very close to the Clinton. But to say, basically, that ISIS could have been prevented if the president had used his leverage to get a status of forces agreement, that is what Republicans, critics of the president, have been saying. To say that the president basically has lost his way is extremely damning, and it's going to be interesting to see. Sometimes these authors, when they go out and do interviews,
they go running away
they
from
back off. Right, yeah. Susan Page got the first interview with him, what we showed for USA Today. We'll see tomorrow when he's on Fox, when he's on NBC and other places. We'll see if he backs off. If he doesn't back off, the White House better hope there's other news to blot this out because it is a damning critique.
Seems like his instinct right now is to go further than the book in some ways. And when he's asked, he's like diving in deeper rather than backpedaling away.
He's famous from his time back in the Clinton and the Nixon administration for being a guy who tells hard truths.
Right. And a straight shooter guy. Here, my question is the political question, right? How much do you think, I mean, he was not an original Clinton person, but he became very much a Clinton person.
That's right.
How much do you think he is carrying water, political water for Hillary Clinton in this instance, giving her, saying things that she would like to say, but she can't say quite that frontally.
Let's face it, there are a lot of elite Democrats, and Leon Panetta is one, who look at the Clinton years now with some nostalgia if they find certain aspects of President Obama's leadership wanting. And in the national security area, that's what Leon Panetta found. He's going to be outspoken, I think. I don't think he's an author who's going to back off in the White House. As I said, better hope there's a lot of news to mask what is a damning critique from a guy who a lot of Democrats respect.
I think it's possible you're going to see this in some Republican ads before we get to the midterms, too.
Okay. Moving on, and RNC press releases. Bill Clinton today back in Arkansas, and thus all is right with the political world. The man from hope is there to give hope to Mark Pryor and the other Democrats who are on the ballot. Today is the last day of voter registration in Arkansas. This afternoon in Conway, Arkansas, President Clinton served up what I like to call a Clinton classic. More in sadness than in anger, he said Republicans in Arkansas were trying to pull a fast one on the voters.
They want you to make it a protest vote. All three of these races, they're saying, hey, you may like these guys, but hey, you know what you got to do. You got to vote against the president. After all, it's your last shot. It's a pretty good scam, isn't it? Give me a 6-year job for a 2-year protest. That's Mark Pryor's opponent's message.
All right, first of all, we just have to stipulate we could watch that all day. The man is talking the owls down from the tree. It's just awesome. But that message, I've seen him do it, and you have, at the end of campaigns. He gives kind of the strategic voting advice.
Right.
And he's basically saying, don't vote to punish President Obama and give a guy a 6-year term since President Obama will be gone in 2 years. And, oh, by the way, implicitly, there might be another person named Hillary Clinton there who would like to work with Mark Pryor.
First of all, there are so many things that are great about that. The sing-song, the lilt in the voice, and he's, like, you know, totally on fire. He's down in Arkansas.
He also looked fantastic.
He's doing a lot of campaigning, we know, from now to Election Day. He's going to be in almost every competitive Senate race in the country. But this one means more to him than any other place. It's probably the place where he can move the numbers most, and that still doesn't mean a huge amount. But he's going to be here in Arkansas today and tomorrow. He's going to be back in Arkansas at least one more time before Election Day. I think it matters in that race, and Mark Pryor's in real trouble. Bill Clinton can really help him there. And I love the way that Clinton in that, although it seems a little convoluted, he's going straight into the teeth of the Republican argument, which is basically punish. This is a referendum on Barack Obama. He's saying, no, it's not. It's not a referendum on Obama. You got to focus on this guy.
And Tom Cotton, the Republican Senate nominee, Congressman, is saying basically the Clinton years were great. You know, we're against Barack Obama. He doesn't want to take Bill Clinton on frontally. Republicans know that this is not the be all and end all. Bill Clinton's not going to swing the race completely.
Right.
But he is worth more points on the ground in that state than any other human being alive is worth in any state in the union. And he's got not just Mark Pryor, but James Lee Witt, Mike Ross running for governor, close friends of his who he'd love to help. And he got pretty good today. As we both know, as the day goes on,
right,
he gets better. That was his morning event.
Right.
His afternoon event.
He's on fire tonight.
And then, of course, he's got events tomorrow.
There was a great poll yesterday came out, an NBC News Annenberg study, that says that basically Bill Clinton is the only endorser in either party who actually matters. And it's true, I believe, particularly among undecided voters, he's over 50% approval.
Yep. Right.
No one else like that.
Moving on. Well, the Jets got squashed last night by the San Diego Chargers, but the owner of the team, Woody Johnson, is throwing a party this evening right down the block from here for some actual primetime players, Republicans who may well end up running for president. Attending Mr. Johnson's Fifth Avenue soiree tonight, Mitt Romney, who will be out here in just a moment, plus Chris Christie, Marco Rubio, Rand Paul, and John Kasich, all in one very nice living room, along with Reince Priebus, the chairman of the party.
A large living room also.
Why is it that all these guys are here in New York to do this? Like, isn't that a little bit overkill?
Well, at least one of them has said to us, you know, that when Woody Johnson calls, you come. And Woody is a guy of great power in the Republican Party. Look, the donor class matters a lot. Anybody who wants to become the next Republican nominee and president of the United States needs to court the money quarters here, and Woody has a lot of those people in his pocket.
The guy who's not there is Jeb Bush, who I've got a piece about on BloombergPolitics.com right now. Jeb Bush is not there. The fact of the matter is, all those guys who are there have some toehold in the New York financial community. The vast, overwhelming favorite is Jeb Bush. And everybody there auditioning is auditioning knowing that if Jeb gets in the race, almost everybody in that room is going to be for Jeb.
Or auditioning for the fact that if Jeb doesn't get in the race, they want to be there to pick up the pieces and try to pick up some big chunk of that money.
Exactly. All right, moving on, please.
All right, Fonzie.
Yes, sir?
Cue the organ. I believe that's a baseball organ. That's awesome. It's October baseball time and Mark has his Cracker Jacks. And for Beltway baseball fans, it's the best of times and the worst of times. Last night, the Baltimore Orioles completed a three-game sweep of the Detroit Tigers.
O-R-I-O-L.
Josh Taranja really happy about that. And we'll now move on to play the Cinderella Royals of Kansas City. But today, out west, the Washington Nationals, the other Beltway baseball team, are on the brink of being eliminated in similarly decisive fashion by my San Francisco Giants. Mark, is there any chance that our friend Al Hunt will not be crying in his beer later tonight?
I don't see the Nationals winning three in a row. I will say the American League Series is awesome. Royals versus Orioles, two exciting, interesting teams. I make the Orioles the favorite in that.
You know why the Giants are going to win?
Yeah.
Because potheads beat bureaucrats anytime.
Every time.
All right. Coming up, there's been a lot of speculation that Mitt Romney might want to run for president again. So to get to the bottom of it, we called in a source with firsthand knowledge. Mitt's here after the break.
Bloomberg's With All Due Respect is brought to you by Koch Industries. Learn more at CokeCareers.com.
Koch Industries started in the heartland, and we've expanded to nearly every state. Today, that's more than 60,000 American jobs. You may not always see our name on the products you use, but we help make better food, clothing, shelter, technologies, and other necessities. Here, we build on each other's ideas to create more opportunities for people everywhere. Together, we are Coke.
Gunderman Group.
Gunderman Group is growing.
Getting in a groove.
Growth is gratifying.
The goal is to grow.
Gotta get greater growth.
I just talked to UPS. They've got expert advice, special discounts, new technologies, like smart pickups.
They'll only show up when you print a label, and it's automatic. We save time and money.
Time? Money?
Time and money.
Awesome.
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 I love logistics.
I think that the Malaysian government creates a very business-friendly environment. They've been working alongside us throughout the 40 over years. We wouldn't be where we are today without that support. And obviously, that support would continue.
Malaysia is at the forefront of success. We have very talented people, world-class infrastructure, and we provide a very strategic environment for businesses to grow.
Only Bloomberg Television has the interviews you want to hear.
One of the fascinating things about Twitter is that once you get it, it becomes indispensable to you.
My eyes were all created equal.
Online, on your tablet, and on your phone. Bloomberg Television, wherever you are.
All right, our guest tonight has run a lot of things. He ran the state of Massachusetts. He ran the 2002 Winter Olympics, and he ran for president twice and maybe counting. Governor Mitt Romney, thanks for joining us today.
Good to be with you.
I want to ask you about a little bit of news a day. The Supreme Court decided not to take these cases on same-sex marriage. The polls suggest the country is moving towards greater tolerance and desire for legalized same-sex marriage, and the courts seem to be moving in that direction for the most part. Do you think things are headed that way?
Well, I think that that's the mood of the country, and that's where the courts have been moving. I would have liked to have seen the Supreme Court take it on and deal with it. They decided to push it off, which I think just delays the decision for a little further down the road. But I'd have rather seen a decision this year.
Right. Okay.
Governor, we talked about Leon Panetta a little earlier in the show. He's gone public with this criticism of the president for not obtaining a status of forces agreement that would have left some American troops in Iraq. This is a position that you have articulated on many occasions in the past. What do you think voters should make of Leon Panetta's criticism? Should this matter in the midterm elections?
Well, I think perhaps more than for many years, you see American people very concerned about their own security. They look at ISIS, and it makes them nervous. And they recognize that the threat of radical violent jihadism was not swept off the earth by the Obama administration, but instead is alive and in some respects more dangerous than it was some time ago. And so what he's saying is consistent with what a lot of people on the left and the right have been saying, which is we should have had a status of forces agreement in Iraq. The president should have taken action earlier in Syria. to isolate and find some moderate voices and arm them so that we wouldn't have the kind of threat that we're now facing. It's just another indictment of the president's failed foreign policy. I think Leon Panetta is saying it's not just a failed foreign policy, he's now adrift. He really doesn't know where to go. I'd say that's because the president has seen that his policy has been extraordinarily ineffective, and now he doesn't quite know where to head.
Should this be an issue for voters? Will it be an issue for voters?
Of course. Does foreign policy matter? Does the fact that there are people in the world that want to attack America and attack American people and our interests around the world, does that matter? Of course it does.
And Leon Panetta, does his making the charge make it more serious?
Well, I think when you have someone who is clearly identified as a leader in Democrat circles say what Republicans have been saying, frankly say what Hillary Clinton said the other day about the president's foreign policy as well, saying basically he doesn't have one, that saying we're not going to mess up is not a foreign policy. Obviously, people are saying what I think is now pretty well understood by the American people, which is the president wasn't right about ISIS being the JV team. Right. He wasn't right with regards to Iraq and the status of forces agreement. He wasn't right in Syria. He was not right with regards to Russia. And those mistakes have cost us dearly.
You're super sick of answering questions about 2016. We're super sick of your normal answers because, you know, they're the same as they should be since you haven't changed your position.
Yeah.
But we've got a theory.
Uh-huh.
All right. In 2012, as we wrote in our book, Double Down, you basically looked at the field. You didn't want to run, but you thought it was important, as we understand it, for the Republicans to nominate someone who could win. You thought, based on who was going to run, that you would be stronger and that you felt sort of an obligation to run. Our theory is that might be true again this time. And we want to show you some tape from last month from one of the best political analysts in America who talked about the prospect of Jeb Bush running and how that might affect any calculation you'd have. Take a look.
I think Jeb probably will end up running myself. I think, you know, people are probably looking at that. He's probably looking at it very carefully right now.
Why would his entrance in the race matter to your supporters or not?
Well, I think, you know, he would draw on a very similar base that we would draw on. And I think I'm sure he's considering it very seriously right now.
So this woman, Ann Romney, political strategist, thinks Jeb
knows you pretty well.
Yeah, thinks
she does.
Thinks Jeb Bush done. Are we right? Basically, you're in the same position you were. You're not inclined to run. Your family isn't gung ho about it. But if you look at and see no Jeb Bush, no Chris Christie, no one who you think can raise the money, compete against the Democratic nominee, that you'll think about it.
Well, I think Jeb is an excellent person, could be a terrific president. I think that about a lot of the people who are running on the Republican side or who I think will get in. My guess is you're going to see 15 or so people on the stage at the first debate. I don't know who they all are going to be at this stage.
If you don't see anybody you think can win.
Among those people, we're going to find someone who catches fire, who ignites the interest of the Republican base, and you're going to see someone who can go on to become president. And that's why I said, look, I'm not running, I'm not planning on running, and I got nothing new on that story.
All right.
You left that door open a little bit, though. You said circumstances could change.
And then I went on to say, I'm not letting my head go there. Where I'm focused is making sure that we nominate the right person who cares about the kinds of issues I care about. Okay. And so I'm going to work to try and encourage us as a party and as a group of candidates who are running. I want to help them recognize how important foreign policy is, how important it is to deal with our economy here at home, to create jobs, and to deal with the looming issue of poverty. That's become a greater and greater issue over these last 6 years, which isn't being addressed.
You mentioned Hillary Clinton a few minutes ago. One of the things you really know a lot about is grandparenthood. The Clintons have just become grandparents. Do you have any advice for Hillary and Bill about how to handle that?
Yeah, just love it. It's the best part of life. You don't have to change diapers. You don't have to discipline. You just get to be with the grandkids and watch every little action they carry out with the greatest amount of joy and enthusiasm. I love being a grandparent. It's a lot easier than being a dad, but the rewards are enormous. It's really fun.
You have a British iTunes account?
A British iTunes account? No, I just have iTunes. I don't know that it's British.
Well, if you had a British one, you could be watching the new season of Downton Abbey right now because it's already on there. Not on here, but you're a big fan of the show, right?
I do watch Downton Abbey,
right.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the show when Matthew Crawley was still alive versus post when Matthew Crawley's dead? Show's just as good or not as good?
Well, you know, I think the show was most enjoyable in the first season. Okay. And then when Matthew went off to war, it was a bit of a departure from where we'd been the first couple of seasons. And then for those that don't already know, his passing, I think, was unfortunate for the show. But I still love it. I got to tell you, it's enjoyable. I actually like the downstairs part more than the upstairs part, even though I think Mary is an absolutely delightful character and I love watching her.
Why do you like downstairs more?
I think the characters are more full and enjoyable to watch. And What, are we really talking about Downton Abbey?
We are. But now, the dog on Downton Abbey's name Isis. You think that dog's going to have an image problem?
I didn't know the dog's name was Isis. But, you know, I love watching the dog, too. At the very beginning of the show with a little tail wagging. It's prescient.
Yeah.
We know you like movies and books, right? So I was looking at a list of some of your favorites. So Twilight, The Hunger Games, Divergent.
Well, I like them all.
Those are all teenage books.
I know. That's my point. I'm curious about how it is that you have the taste of a 13-year-old girl.
I read a lot of things. But there's nothing wrong with 13-year-old girls and their tastes.
I got nothing against it.
I want to be able to identify with my granddaughters.
Okay.
But they're also kind of fun. But I also like Brandon Sanderson and all the science fiction and Orson Scott Card. And then I read Lee Child and the Jack Reacher series. But I do some of that with some of my time, but mostly I read more serious stuff, like the kinds of things you read. If you get sleepy at the end of the day, you want something like that to really knock you out.
Now, you're on the road a lot, even though you're not running for anything, doing a lot of campaigning. Why is it that so many people want to take selfies with you?
It's just a strange thing in America today, which if you're famous or you've been on TV, people want to take a selfie and then put it on their Facebook and say, look, here's me with a famous person. I wish I could say all those people voted for me and I'd have won by a wide margin, but I'm convinced that most of the selfies are just looking for someone they've seen before. By the way, they don't always know who I am.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had people come up and say, I know you somehow. Who are you? And I always say, I'm Tom Brady of the New England Patriots. And I've only gotten away with that once. One person believed it and took a selfie with me. The rest just laugh.
Okay, he used to have a Mustang convertible, right?
Yes.
He traded that in for a minivan.
Again. For a maxi van.
A maxi
van.
I got the 15-passenger Ford Econoline. This is from our home in Massachusetts to get up to our home in New Hampshire, the summer place. And when the kids come in, grandkids come in the summertime, getting them from Logan Airport to New Hampshire, it's a two-hour drive. No one could fit their entire family in the Mustang, but now they could fit in this big Econoline. It's the dealer said, we have never in the history of this dealership at Granite Ford ever had someone turn in a Mustang for a Ford van.
Awesome.
What is the single weirdest thing that happened to you as a presidential candidate? Single weirdest experience?
I shook so many hands at a couple of events that I began to get kind of a kink in my back. And so I asked if the guy who traveled with me, Garrett Jackson, who's a brilliant guy, I said, can you find someone to get me a back massage at the hotel tonight? We're at the Marriott San Francisco Airport Hotel. And he got a massage therapist, I think, from the Ritz-Carlton to come over and come in our room. And so he sat there to make sure that we had two people there at all times. And she gave me a massage. And she was Hispanic-American. And after I left to go get changed and showered and so forth, she turned to him and she said, is he a dancer?
and Garrett said, yes. Yeah, he's a dancer.
That was the best compliment I have ever had. He has strong legs.
What was she keying off of? The legs.
The legs. The strong legs. They're bird legs, actually, but she thought they were strong.
All right, Governor Romney, we're not done with you yet. That story was quite something. We're going to be right back. We're going to do something more fun back there.
Sounds good.
He's a dancer.
A dancer.
Dancer.
I should love it.
Bloomberg's With All Due Respect is brought to you by BP, proud to be America's largest energy investor.
When folks think about what they get from Alaska, they think salmon and energy. But the energy BP produces up here creates something else as well. Jobs all over America. Engineering and innovation jobs, advanced safety systems and technology, shipping and manufacturing. Across the United States, BP supports more than 250,000 jobs. When we set up operation in one part of the country, people in other parts go to work. That's not a coincidence. It's one more part of our commitment to America.
The challenges that industry or enterprise faces the most is the consumerization of IT. Companies are having to increasingly be aware of their employee base, consuming of mobile technology and capability, and bringing that into the business and trying to leverage it in their daily work. Security is even more important in the consumerization of IT. Samsung has addressed this by bringing in a security framework to help the enterprise actually get the balance of both. Samsung's doing a lot to help our businesses meet those changes and those challenges. I believe we're the right solution for them. Samsung is committed to a holistic approach in meeting the needs of our enterprise customers in the areas of security, software, solutions, and support.
Realize the full potential of mobility. Find out more at Bloomberg.com/ad/mobile next.
Are you going to iron it on? Are you serious?
Oh, you're up. Oh, my goodness.
This may not end well.
I love it.
Governor, that's a scene from the movie Mitt. The Netflix movie came out earlier this year. Got a lot of praise when it came out, mainly because it showed a side of you that people hadn't seen in a lot of cases, funny and warm and ironic and superhuman. I wonder how many people have come up to you after that movie came out who voted for President Obama, then saw that movie and came up to you and said, man, if I'd seen that before, I would have voted for him.
That has happened. I've got to tell you, but guys like you already knew me, so you wouldn't have changed your vote. But but there are some folks who say that those 30-second ads didn't capture my whole human life, and that can't be a big surprise.
Any big Hollywood left-wingers?
No, although I did have one very famous Hollywood left-winger say to me, in my business, you have to be a liberal Democrat to get a job. But he said, no one knows how I really vote. So there's more of us over there than people would guess.
I want to do one last thing with you over here on this photo, which shows all but one of your grandchildren.
Wow.
Now, you're known as a great-grandfather. We want to test both your memory and your lovingness.
Oh,
so
gosh.
I want you to run the wall here. Point to them all. Start with this cute
there, right?
Boy on the left. All 21 names. We'll give you about 30 seconds to do it. Ready?
Geez.
And go.
Well, that's Nate. And that's Miles, and that's Johnny, and that's Eleanor, and that's Soleil, and that's Kieran. And this over here, let's see, who can I even see back here? Let's see, we've got Thomas back here, and this little one that's crying, that's got to be William. No, that's William down here, so that's
all right.
David.
All right.
And
you know
that's
what?
Allie.
Say you proved your point.
Oh, okay, all right.
Give you credit for the rest
of it. All right. You have to ask for a lifeline anytime along.
I know all
good.
My grandkids.
You did really well. Governor, thank you very much. We appreciate you joining us.
Oh, this one of these? All righty. Great,
thanks,
guys.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Good to be with you.
We'll be right back in just a minute.
Bloomberg's With All Due Respect is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, engineering some of the most advanced vehicles on the road today.
The lightest or nothing. The smartest or nothing. The quietest or nothing. The sleekest, sexiest, baddest, safest, tightest, quickest, harshest, or nothing. At Mercedes-Benz, we do things one way or we don't do them at all. Introducing the all-new C-Class. The best or nothing. Try the new Bloomberg Businessweek Plus app for Samsung phone and tablet and get your first year of Bloomberg Businessweek free. You'll get deeper intelligence on global business, innovative companies, technology trends, and exclusive behind-the-scenes videos and interviews. Start your free Bloomberg Businessweek Plus subscription on your Samsung device today.
Ours was the first modern airliner, revolutionary by every standard. And that became our passion. To always build something better. Airplanes that fly cleaner and farther on less fuel. That redefine comfort and connect the world like never before. After all, you can't turn dreams into airplanes unless your passion for innovation is nonstop.
Koch Industries started in the heartland, and we've expanded to nearly every state. Today, that's more than 60,000 American jobs. You may not always see our name on the products you use, but we help make better food, clothing, shelter, technologies, and other necessities. Here, we build on each other's ideas to create more opportunities for people everywhere. Together, we are Coke.
On this air a half an hour a day, but we're live 24/7 on BloombergPolitics.com. There is a ton of good stuff on the site right now. I'm going to talk about two things. One, Will Leach has written a great piece about Beltway baseball, the obsessions and fascinations of Washington with its teams, especially the Washington Nationals, who, as I said before, look like they're about to lose tonight. But it's a really great socio cultural piece. And then Sasha Eisenberg's written a piece about the science of persuasion related to Planned Parenthood in particular, but it's a good piece of political science, tactics, and sociology all wrapped in one.
All right. We got other stuff on there you can look at right now. Dave Knowles wraps up Bill Clinton's day in Arkansas. And then Jonathan Allen and Annie Linsky have a really smart take on the Supreme Court decision or decision not to take the gay same-sex marriage case and what that could mean for the midterm elections. Scott Walker, a longtime opponent of same-sex marriage, basically said, that's it, it's done, nothing's going to change. As John said, we'll be back in 23 and a half hours. Right now, Bloomberg's Taking Stock is up next.
Partnerships occur when both share a passion for improving, for growing in harmony. Speak from the heart and respect the other. Feeling of being comfortable, of being open, that creates the true partnership, which ensures the greatest.